Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back. So today we have with us Andrea Nakayama. And Andrea is the host of the 15-Minute Matrix podcast and the founder of Functional Nutrition Alliance. Andrea is leading thousands of students and practitioners around the globe in a revolution to offer better solutions to the growing chronic illness epidemic by highlighting the importance of systems biology, root cause methodology, and therapeutic partnerships. She helps historically underserved individuals reclaim ownership of their health. So, of course, we're going to have an incredible conversation because this one's going to go a little bit deep and a little bit wide because we have a lot to cover. I mean, especially when we're dealing with our health, right? Because it's not just superficial. It's not just the surface because our health is so complex and it's so intertwined with how we show up as our best and most confident selves. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm excited to go deep and wide.
Yes, me too. I know right before we were hitting record, Andrea pops on. She goes, I'm ready to go deep. And I said, great, we're going wide too, because these are like topics of our passion and our hearts. And so when we feel like there's a little bit constraint where it's like, oh, we only have to play on the surface. No, you know, this is the podcast where we go deep and we cover topics and we talk about the hard stuff and we talk about the messy middles. And so we're going to unpack that today. So Andrea, I'd love for you to kind of share a little bit of your backstory as to how you got into the works that you do today.
Yeah. So my story really started with my late husband's diagnosis and illness and death from a very aggressive brain tumor. So he was diagnosed back in April of 2000 when I was just 7 weeks pregnant with our first and only child. So I already was a foodie at the time, and I was starting to experience some of my own health issues that in retrospect, I could see were my autoimmune condition. I have Hashimoto's, but I didn't have that understanding yet. I didn't work in the field. I worked in a completely different field. I was in book publishing. And I looked to food and nutrition to see how I could support both of us, him going through myriad treatments and being thrust into the medical system, and my body growing a baby, to be our best selves and hopefully elongate the lifespan he was given. He was told he would live for 6 months. I was 7 weeks pregnant. We can do the math. He was not expected to see our son born. He actually died when our son was 19 months old. So he did outlive his prognosis. But it was a deep dive. I think of it as my boot camp into the realm of what I'm going to say is food is medicine. And I don't mean it was in place of the medical treatment. I mean it was in addition to everything we were doing. And so that's what led me to my passion for what nutrition and functional nutrition could provide to folks who are thrust into the medical system in myriad ways with chronic health issues. It did take me time to reinvent myself and create a new career after Isamu passed away, but that became my passion and my calling and has led me to where I am today.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry to hear, you know, your late husband's passing. And, you know, now that this journey that you've embarked on has really opened your eyes to so much of that, what's happening in the medical world and how you can become an advocate for the health, for the systems, for the structure, for everything that goes into it. Because now you have to set yourself up and your son. And it's like, how do we now navigate this new normal?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I would imagine it came with a multitude of challenges and questions and fears and doubt and all the things that one can imagine just is unpacked. And now you're sorting through, how do we deal with this? How do we manage this? How do we continue going on?
Yeah. I mean, there was so much beauty too, Rachel. If I'm really honest about the time I was thinking about our conversation this morning and you know, the moment of his passing, but everything leading up to that, when you're faced with a grave health issue like this, a lot falls away. A lot of the BS goes away and you become very focused and intentional and connected. And really, there's not a lot of room for excess drama. And I think that I can look back on that time as, yes, challenging and scary. And I couldn't really come to terms with the fact that he was going to die. I would have to visit it and then live in the reality that he was here. I would visit and come back, right? And we were also pregnant and experiencing that journey together. So I just want to say that there was so much beauty in this very difficult time because it brought us even closer together. I mean, he was my soulmate, but it brought us even closer together and into a shared experience that had such an intentional purpose that fuels everything I do over 20 years later. I mean, that son is going to be 24 and is living across the country, was living in Japan not too long ago, went to school in Ohio. Like, you know, it's a lifespan and it still really feeds and fuels my purpose.
I love how you mentioned it's just this beautiful story combined when you think of all life's intricacies and the intimate moments that all of a sudden, the world doesn't matter. Your world gets so much smaller. And all of a sudden, that noise dissipates. And all the things that were taking up our bandwidth, we're just like, this is what truly matters. This is life in the moment. And bringing that into really cherish and grow and nurture and develop that relationship as you're going through your pregnancy and the news of your husband's diagnosis and things like that. I mean, how many of us listening allow so much of our world to penetrate our inner world and rob us of what truly matters? And I think that you've really shared this beautiful testament to it, because that really does. It's like you got the reality that this is happening, but then you also have the real reality that these are the micro moments and I'm not going to have them forever. And right. This is what matters here and now. I love the beautiful transitions that you shared in those little nuggets, because it really helps us paint that picture. And so as you're coming through this journey and overcoming so much, what were some of the things that brought you the joy in those moments? Because I know where we can focus our energy, what we get more of, right? But you shifted the whole mindset and appreciation for the fact of life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there was an essence to what we were experiencing together. And I can talk about the before Isamu died piece, but also after, what really fueled me afterwards and where I was able to take leaps and bounds because of some of that experience. So I think that during the illness, and again, this is a long time ago now, but during the illness, it really did feel like everything was focused on the decisions that we were making day to day, the togetherness that we were in. I mean, there were a lot of ironies. He took an experimental drug called thalidomide that had been used in the past to deal with nausea in pregnant women and left their babies with just deformities, depending on when they were growing in utero and when the medication was taken. So it was an off-label medication that was being used for his condition in a very high dose. This is called an anti-angiogenic. It strangles new blood vessels. So in a body that's growing a baby, a new blood vessel is a growing human. In a person who has cancer, a growing blood vessel is a cancerous cell. So the philosophy behind using these anti-angiogenics is to strangle those new blood vessels. But again, off-label, low dose in its formulation and used at a high dose for this intervention. The reason I'm telling this story is because every single pill had a pregnant woman with a slash through it on the pills and he had to take 24 of them every single day. Here I am, pregnant. He's taking these pills with this, you know, the irony of the pregnant woman on them. I wouldn't touch them, even though I was preparing food and doing a lot of other things. But we would create a ritual around the taking of those pills because it became harder and harder for him to swallow everything that he had to take in. So we had a practice where when I would cook dinner, he would read books to me. And when he was swallowing pills, which took sometimes over an hour, I would read to him. So we read all the Harry Potter books. I think there were four out before he passed away. We read his Dark Material. We read to each other things that were playful and engaged. And we never would have engaged in that kind of practice before. We were both really hardworking, on career paths, had our times together, but also had a lot of time apart. So I just think like these practices that we embrace when we're in dire moments are so different than how we actually live our, like literally we never would have done that. And I can't imagine doing it now in my life, but those moments are precious to me to recall just sitting with each other at the dinner table, me reading to him while he's like swallowing all these pills. So just a little moment to treasure. And when I think about the flip side, the other side after his passing, one of the things that I remember feeling was that Isamu brought out the best in me and recognizing that if he brought out the best in me, that best self was in me and that it was my purpose to live that best self that he brought out in me as a tribute to him, but also a tribute to myself and to life. So I think it's just like the depth of the fabric of the experience that we all have. I'm telling my story, hopefully as an opening for others to realize where these stories of self and history are actually a huge part of who we are.
And you're so right with the fragility and the beauty of life. And as you said, had this not happened, we would have gone a different way of living.
Yes.
And in these moments, and those listening, you know, we don't need to have something so major or catastrophic happen to really shake things up and make us become so alive in the moment.
Yes.
Because we're not promised tomorrow. We're not even promised in an hour from now. So yes, how are we showing up today intentionally to seek out the good, to live with purpose and pursue those things that really bring us joy and passion and are why we're here on this earth.
Yes.
And so I love that you're this memorial of how your husband taught you a new way of living and a new way of being and a new way that says, Andrea, this gift that I leave you is the gift that you've given me that you don't know lies within you.
Yes.
And it's such a beautiful, beautiful gift. And so as you're navigating these transitions and, you know, it's this whole new area. I mean, obviously, you don't know much about the medical side at this point. And throughout your journey and the research that you guys had to do for your own advocacy, what were some of the gaps that you found with functional medicine that were leaving people with that chronic illness that they felt undeserved?
Yeah, or underserved, really.
Underserved. Yeah. We feel that we're not getting what we need.
Yes. And I think for me, there's a journey there in that I didn't even know functional medicine existed at the time we entered into dealing with the brain tumor. It wasn't for many, many years that I understood functional medicine. I was, in retrospect, practicing or thinking functionally. But at the time that Isamu was diagnosed, I was not in the field, but I very quickly encountered two really profound gaps in the medical system that started to wake me up to other gaps and other opportunities. Those two gaps were everybody is treated like their diagnosis. So when we enter into the medical system, we are that glioblastoma, that Hashimoto's, that Crohn's. And I've heard numerous people speak about, thousands of patients that I've worked with speak about this, but even other doctors speak about when they've been diagnosed with something and how they feel like they're just treated, like their diagnosis or the treatment they're about to go through, and that's how they're referred to. So gap number one, people are treated like their diagnoses. And reminder, we are people with diagnoses. We are not our diagnoses. And then gap number two, and these again are the early gaps I encountered, was that everybody with the same diagnosis is treated the same. It is a one-size-fits-all system. Maybe there are certain variations, but it is a system that is very protocol-based. And I want to honor our medical system by saying there is a time and a place for the protocol. When we are in acute care situations, that protocol is very necessary. Unfortunately, we have a huge rise in people who are experiencing chronic health issues. And chronic health issues, you know, that means we are sick and not getting better. Autoimmunity, chronic Lyme, issues with our hormones, migraines, chronic pain, things where people are looking and trying and doing everything medicine has told them to do and still no solution. And that's because we have to think beyond the protocol. So that gap that everything is protocol based was a second realization for me that there needed to be another way. And I sat with those gaps like little eggs that ultimately drove me to want to change careers, to put myself back through years of school as a single working mother, to realize a new career. And it was after starting a practice and even after starting to teach other clinicians because of the success that I was having in practice that I found my way to functional medicine, realized the alliances with what we were actually, the frameworks we were thinking through, and adapted what functional medicine's core was about to fit the needs of dietary and lifestyle modification as adjunct care to what's happening in our medical care.
And I was just going to ask you about that too. So I'm glad you brought up the dietary and the lifestyle, because I think that is, well, a couple of things that you talked about I wanted to touch upon as well, because when you talked about how diagnosis, where the individuals are being treated as a one size fits all, that is something I've seen in the medical industry. And just side tangent here, I have a loved one who is unfortunately has chronic illness and COPD, and it becomes at that end stage. And so I know when they're seeking the treatment, the medical team just feel, well, you've made your bed, you lie in it.
Yes.
And it's so discouraging. And yes, we have been on an uphill battle with this individual's health for several years. And it's unfortunate because they try to just label you as your disease, your ailment, your illness, whatever that is. And witnessing it firsthand from a caretaker's perspective, it's so discouraging because you're like, no, this is a loved one. This is a human being. This is somebody who's lived. And we can't control what happens on a sickness or a disease level on that. Yes, there's actions that we control when you talk about dietary and lifestyle changes. However, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, right?
Correct.
So when they started doing the diagnosis and the same one-size-fits-all treatment, I felt like the whole empathy and the caretaking and what our health facilities and our health industry is supposed to do is to provide care.
Yes.
And I felt as a caregiver to the one that I love, the care was not there. So I can empathize with what you had to journey through. And it's so difficult and it's so challenging. But I love that you mentioned about these gaps because it shines awareness in those areas. Because even if you're in the health industry or you have a loved one who is sick, be aware of this, because what I have found is that I have to be my loved one's number one advocate. They had wanted to cut her out several years ago. And without us stepping in, my family, we wouldn't know where, you know, that we would have a different story today. So it's unfortunate and it's so sad. And we need voices such as yours to really speak out about the misinformation and to shine awareness and being the advocate for our loved ones. So going back to the dietary and the lifestyle, I'd love for you to unpack that, because I know on this podcast, we love taking that deep dive in, because again, things become systemic where that's, yeah, that's where I'm looking for.
Yes. Yeah.
Comes the problem is what we treat, but there's underlying issues that are really at play. And if we can address those today, how much different could our life and our lifestyle change?
Yeah. And there's so much you said there, and I'm sorry for the pain you're going through as a caregiver and that the person you're caring for, the loved one you're caring for, is going through. And I think that there's a little bit I want to just unpack there in what, as patients, we expect of our medical system and of our doctors and caregivers. I think it is a system that is not only geared towards acute care, but is also driven by a lot of financial interests these days. And so I'm seeing a lot of doctors and nurses who are experiencing their own moral insult and injury because they got into the field to be caregivers and they can't always be that anymore because of the system that they work in. I've trained over 8,500 practitioners around the globe. The number of nurses that I'm seeing opt out of the profession to pursue what I'm teaching because they recognize that they want patient-centered care and they can't deliver patient-centered care. They're in a sick care system, not a healthcare or patient-centered care system. So I just want to speak to, it's not one person's fault right now. And I feel like what happens when we get frustrated with the system is we get annoyed with the provider. And I think we just need a reframe of our entire thinking and also recognize the limitations of our doctors. We want them to tell us everything. We want them to say, we want to go to them and say, I have XYZ, Crohn's disease, COPD. Does my diet matter? And if they say no, we're angry at them if we're hearing something else. It's not in their scope of practice. I'm here to say, let the doctor do their scope. I'm not trying to fill their scope. And I'm here to support what happens between your visits with your medical provider, or the people I'm training are here to do that. So where dietary and lifestyle, just to get back to that question, sorry for that aside, where dietary and lifestyle modification come in is very, very unique. And my mantra in all I do is everything is connected. We are all unique and all things matter. So that everything is connected is based on the principles in functional medicine and functional nutrition of systems biology. The field in science is the field of omics. So we might know about the microbiome, right? It's a whole community. It's all interrelated. We might know that the gut and the brain are connected, right? These days, that's common knowledge. It wasn't when I started in practice, but we are recognizing the interconnected nature of the body, despite the fact that medicine divides us into ologies. So we go to our endocrinologist for our hormones, our psychologist for our mental health, our gastroenterologist for our digestive health, our immunologist or rheumatologist for our immune health. What I'm saying is, yeah, you might need to go to those people. I'm putting it all together. Everything in the body is connected. We are all unique helps us to understand the reality of bio-individuality. The same diet isn't going to work for everybody. And this may be the biggest golden nugget I can give women, especially because we're always looking for the next diet or the next dietary theory. So-and-so is eating keto or intermittent fasting, or so-and-so is paleo or vegan. And we want to get on these bandwagons, but we don't always realize that we may actually be negatively impacting ourselves because we're embracing principles that don't apply appropriately to our body or our body in this point in time. And so I prefer to give people dietary principles versus basing it on a theory. And I'm happy to share those principles in just a moment. But everything is connected. We are all unique. all things matter. I want to re-empower us with the reality that sleep matters, that lunch matters, that your relationships matter, that if we focus not on finding the quick fix or the next best thing or which herb or which thing to do, if we focus on hydrating, energy, definitely connected to hydration. Physiologically, I can look at somebody's labs and ask them, are you drinking enough water? And they'll be like, how do you know that? Like, physiologically, chronic fatigue, energy levels are going to be impacted by hydration. Sleep is going to impact your microbiome. It's going to impact your hormones. It's going to impact, I'm writing a talk right now on hunger hormones. Sleep is a huge factor impacting your hunger hormones. Stress, I've got loads of it. I get it. But like, what kind of counterbalances and resilience techniques do we have in place? So I just want to encourage folks that, yes, everything's connected and we are all unique, but all things matter. Don't pass go. As you are taking care of yourself, looking for the next protocol that you can't stick to, focus on really establishing practices that are at the core, at the basis, supportive of all the other things you might try or do or experience.
Such great tips. And as you're sharing them, I'm thinking of some of the things that I just from a non-medical side, but abiding by those from hydration to nutrition, managing your stress and getting quality sleep. And so many of us, that sleep is the first to go because we just say, oh, well, you know, we'll just cut that out. Who needs 8 hours when you can go on three? And it's like, you try to run that at full speed, right? How long does that get you? It might get you through the day, but that's not sustainable. And I love that you're really talking about, again, dietary and lifestyle, because all these changes add up to what Andrea said. They're not quick fixes. They're lifelong solutions to the problems that we're dealing with today. So what can we do today? These little micro steps that add up to the macro steps that our health is from the inside out. So yes, we can seek treatment. Yes, we can go to the doctors. Yes, we can get a pill, a supplement, a this or that. But all we're doing then is taking the external, putting it in our mouth to feed the internal, but the internal is still struggling to do whatever it needs to do, right? So I love how you break this down because lifestyle is so key and so important because when we envision what does life, the quality of life, what is it that we want to do here in this time that we're allotted? And when you mention about stress and finding things to counterbalance that, are we bringing joy into our life? Are we bringing in habits and routine? How are we nourishing those relationships that we do have? So all of this, when we take personal inventory and accountability of our life, what does that look like for us? And so I ask our listeners to pause for a moment and what are some of the key areas that you're finding could be improved? Or maybe you're kind of like, well, yeah, I know I need to, but, and then you fill in the blank. So as Andrea is sharing with you, life is so fragile and we are not gifted or promised. So what can we do today? Because our choices or decision to not make that choice is still a choice. So how can we empower ourselves to become our own advocates and our own best friend that we're going to take care and nourish our body, mind, and our spirit? So I love how you unpack that. This is just, this aligns with so much of my passion, my personal passion, coming from a place of not from a health concern. It was more of a mental health concern, I think, at that point. Because I had struggled with dieting because dieting felt like a word of suffocation and restriction. And I was striving for those quick fix solutions to this pain that I was enduring for my whole life. So luckily, I flipped the script and started taking that inside out approach and built a lifestyle. And now I have not looked back and eating disorders, disordered eating, all that stuff is a thing of the past because what we can heal by what we fuel and nourish from the inside out. So I love, love, love that. And so when you talk about the diet and the lifestyle, there's superfoods, let's kind of unpack some of that because you talked about, is there paleo or is it keto? Is it this or it's that? And that can feel so overwhelming, especially when in this diet hunt and you might just be thinking, I just need to lose a quick 10 pounds. Not thinking my life and my lifestyle is at risk here if I don't make those changes.
Yes. And again, there's certain people where I wouldn't even as a practitioner start with food. I would start with what I call the right side of the matrix, because this is all mapped out for me. So those things that you're talking about in the all things matter for me are sleep and relaxation, exercise and movement, nutrition and hydration, stress and resilience, relationships and networks. Even if you're choosing to nourish one of those, that is a starting place. And non-negotiables are sleep, poop, and blood sugar balance. So before I'm even thinking about, oh, go on, there's never a diet I'm putting somebody on unless we're working with a chronic issue that needs some parameters during a time of healing. And I know they have the internal and external resources to follow those guidelines, and it's meant to be short term. It's never long term. So the three dietary principles that I invite people to consider are: number one, fat, fiber, and protein at every meal or snack. Every single one. Just go through your head, fat, fiber, protein. If you don't know what is a good fat, I mean, there's plenty of articles I've written on the Functional Nutrition Alliance site. There's a handout on fats and what to do, on fibers, on proteins. That's where you spend your time, not on what are the rules of a keto diet or what hours do I eat if I'm intermittent fasting or what fat should I put in my coffee? No, just look for what are the quality, nutrient-dense fats, fibers, and proteins. So every meal or snack, that's principle number one. And that helps with two things that I just said, actually three, all three in the non-negotiables: sleep, poop, blood sugar balance. Fat, fiber, protein is going to help with all of those.
This is the first time I've heard about the sleep, poop, and the blood.
Blood sugar balance is, yeah, key.
Yeah.
Principle number two is to eat the rainbow. So really knowing that you are having some fun playing with the colors that come into your body. Those colors that come from nature bring a lot of nutrition to us. They bring a lot of phytonutrients, a lot of heart health, brain health, immune health, so much support that we can get out of those phytonutrients. We also then increase our fiber, which helps with the fat, fiber, protein. So really just saying, how do I play with the rainbow? What can I bring in? What colors do I get? If you have younger children, you can play with it on a board, on the refrigerator. What colors did we get? Where did we get them from? What are we missing? It's really a playful way to crowd in foods instead of worrying always about what we take out. The third principle is to know your yes, no, maybe list. So for some of us, there are no foods. There are foods we don't eat for particular reasons. Either we've identified that they don't make us feel good, or we identify that something is more supportive because of ideological reason, whatever it might be. We may have some no foods, and that's okay as long as that list isn't a mile long, because then we start to introduce nutrient deficiencies. We might know which foods, a superfood that we're like, yeah, when I have that in the morning, I feel great. That's a big yes food. And there may be some foods we're just unsure about. And to keep a yes, no, maybe list helps us to start to identify our bio-individuality. And functional medicine and nutrition, we call these our mediators. What makes me feel better? What makes me feel worse? My job is to make you know more of those things so you have more agency in your health, as opposed to always outsourcing your how you feel to some principal, protocol, or person on Instagram who's telling you the way it should be. So really just knowing yes, no, maybe foods for yourself. I may be saying this and there might be people who are like, I don't know anything I can eat, but I always feel bad, but I have PMS issues, but I'm experiencing resistant weight loss. Whatever it might be, if you don't know, that's where you may need some tracking and listening in and paying attention to see, do I get any clues in how I feel in a day that might actually inform me? And one way to play with that is, let's start with a meal. Let's say it's breakfast. I'm going to try 3 different breakfasts over 3 days and then repeat and take some notes. What did I feel? Did I feel energy to lunch? Did I feel tired that day? Are there any other factors that I would put into that? Can I create as much of a controlled environment as possible? Otherwise, same bedtime, same hydration, same morning routine, but all I'm changing is breakfast. Like, this allows us to get a little bit more in tune. On the flip side of that, there are people who we see in our practice at the Functional Nutrition Alliance who may have what's called conditioned food hypersensitivity, where they're trying to control how their body feels with food so much that they limit their foods because they think if they remove that and that and that and that and that, they'll finally feel better. And in that instance, that's a situation where the body hasn't had, the wound isn't healing, and we're trying to control it with one factor. And it's that one factor isn't the only thing that's going to get us there. And somebody needs to help you with the internal healing. So those are just 2 ends of the spectrum. Whereas some of us might be able to go, oh yeah, when I eat dairy or ice cream, I'm in the bathroom right away. Okay, that's a no food unless you want to take that risk and that's your decision. I'm going to eat the ice cream and I'm going to stay near the bathroom. That is an individual personal decision. And we know our risk reward in any moment, which is, again, a more empowered ownership way of relating to food as opposed to walking around with a bunch of restrictions that are encapsulating what we think works for us.
Ooh, such great tips. And I jotted down a couple of questions too as you're sharing this. Now, when you talked about, let's just say, for example, go back to the example of the 3 different breakfast days, in which we've controlled every single variable. We went to bed at the same time the night before. We woke up at the same time, the day in and day out. And the only thing we're changing in this morning routine is the breakfast. So for those that might have a question similar to what I just was thinking as well, is how long should we be testing this? Like, how, for breakfast 1, breakfast 2, breakfast 3, do we just wait for that immediate result before we say yay, no, or just hold off on that? Like, that might be a maybe. So having that consistency and time of testing was my question that I wrote down. So how long do we stick through this practice, and when is it safe to introduce new foods, and when is it best to start eliminating? Because I know there's so many different food testing and sensitivity kits and all the things out there. I've done a couple of them. They've both given me completely different results, and it left me more confused than just saying, well, I'm just going to eat the thing and deal with the consequences later. So what would your advice be on something like that? Because sometimes what we're receiving could be subtle, or they could be obvious discrepancies. Yeah.
So I'm going to talk first about the at-home allergy testing. And I do have an article about that at the Functional Nutrition Alliance on the blog. It's not worth your money. Really, if you don't understand the context of the information that you're receiving, it's worth nothing. I'd rather you spend your money on a smoothie, right? Like, so I think that there's a lot of testing that's available out there today, and functional medicine is a lot to blame for that. There's a lot of specialty testing that I don't believe in, or that I believe needs to be used in a specific way at a specific time, but that patients are taking this into their own hands and getting confusing information and telling themselves things. I can't eat cherries because something on a test said something one day, and they don't have the context for what that means in terms of an allergy, a sensitivity, an intolerance. The body's complicated. So I'd rather people stop trying to be their own medical advisor and be their own self advisor. So all I'm asking is for us to tune in, and we don't have to get too scientific about it if we are just playing to get in tune. So trying the 3 different breakfasts, first of all, what are we trying to solve for? Like, what is it that we're looking to solve for. If it's weight, I'm just going to say, if there is weight that isn't budging, there's usually underlying reasons. So I just want to give everybody a pass on this idea that like willpower and dieting more is going to get you results. If you have inflammation, if you're constipated, if your hormones are off, like you need some help and support uncovering the why that that's happening. If what you're experiencing in your body is, I'm doing the same things I did 5 years ago and I'm not getting the same results, our bodies change and they need different things. And it's likely not going to be a quick fix. But that doesn't mean it can't be a beautiful journey of uncovering and understanding ourselves more. So I'm not saying that we're going to have some immediate feedback loop. But what I find people do experience is that the little shifts when they're tuned in can give us a lot of information. So even hydrating can give us a lot of information like, wow, I have more energy after a week of hydrating. For the breakfast experiment, I would say day one, day two, day three, repeat, keep a little log. Did you notice anything? You might not. But what are we trying to notice? Are we trying to notice I'm hungry at 11 a.m.? I can't make it to lunchtime. I feel like I'm going to want to go back to sleep. What is it that we're usually experiencing that we're then looking at breakfast in relation to instead of looking for some notion of perfection? I feel fantastic eating oatmeal with walnuts. You know, I don't know that we're going to get that. I'm just looking for the micro messages that help us go, okay, that makes a difference.
I love how you just pull that all together, because as you're sharing that, I'm thinking in my head, okay, energy could be something that we're shooting for. And it might not just be the physical, like, okay, I'm just trying to lose this weight. It could be your every morning you wake up and you're just so tired and you look forward to that cup of coffee. But then you wonder, why am I reaching for the coffee again? And it's noon and now it's 3 o'clock and I could have one at 6 o'clock, whatever this could be for you that's listening. But as you're sharing that, because sometimes what we're trying to achieve out of our goals, especially with diet and lifestyle, is we want to ultimately feel better. So what does better look like for you? What does it feel like? Do you have that more energy in the morning? You are more vibrant, alert. You are more active and present. You're in tune with your kids, or you realize, hey, I'm not taking this nap watching my son play soccer or whatever. And so these are little things that, again, self-awareness is your biggest like tool in your tool belt. It's the one thing the light bulb turns on. You're like, wow, I had no idea. So to Andrea's point, it's not so much about the weight or treating a medical condition yet, because we're unaware at this point. So the awareness level shines in when we can start to say, yeah, those little things will add up. So how do I feel today? Okay, next day. How do I feel today compared to yesterday? Third day. How do I feel compared to these last 3 days? And that's just the observation. Then, as Andrea's sharing, is that we want to now repeat that process, assuming that nothing major happened. Like, you don't have to run to the bathroom after like first one. I'm like, okay, ate ice cream for breakfast, I'm out, right? Now we repeat that process. And so now the second go at it, you're bringing out your notepad and you're jotting down, because that awareness light bulb turned on. Second go, okay, this is what's happening. And then your third go. And now you're painting the picture and you're seeing the gaps. And as Andrea had shared earlier about gaps, how they bring that awareness that we can help close them. So this has just been really eye-opening, because as you're sharing that, I'm thinking of the food testing that I did. One of the things they told me that I was highly allergic to and was off the charts was egg whites. I've been eating egg whites since I was probably 6 years old. I've always hated yolks. And so I said, wow, that's quite interesting, because I've been eating them for decades and I've never thought that they bothered me. I removed them for probably about a month, did not notice a single difference. Yes. So now I put them back in my diet because I actually enjoy them.
Yes. Yeah. And I think a couple of more tangible things that came to mind while you were sharing, Rachel, is if we think about one thing I've experienced with a lot of clients in the past is that kind of witching hour, that 3 or 4 o'clock time where you want to go get a cookie or a cup of coffee or getting to the kids' game and you're like, let me just stop and get something. And what I would have clients do is keep something on their phone where they logged the time that that happened every single day. What's the window of time? Oh, it happens between 2:30 and 3. Okay, at 2 o'clock, we're going to put in a fat, fiber, protein-rich snack and see what happens, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a good example of this thing is happening. It's leading me to this behavior that I don't like. I don't feel proud of. I'm not feeling good about. It ruins the rest of my night. So what do I do there? I also just want to say that tuning into the little things that we experience, and I can speak to several with myself, but I'm going to talk about coffee because I love my cup of coffee in the morning with a little raw honey and some coconut milk. That is just so yummy to me. However, I notice if I'm really stressed at work and I run a team and I have to like really drive things forward, there's a lot happening. If I'm stressed, it not only amps up my heart rate, but it makes me a little more aggressive. And that little bit more aggressive, sure, it may be something that works for some people, but it doesn't work for the people around me, right? So me noticing that I can have a cup of coffee like I like to enjoy it on the weekend when I'm not stressed, my morning is slower, I can enjoy it is fine. And yet noticing what happens when I have that coffee during the week and how it not only impacts me and my body, but everybody around me makes me think twice about that cup of coffee. It doesn't mean I don't do it. It's a risk-reward situation. There might be some days where I'm like, forget it, I'm just having that. But I'm aware of those little things. And I think it's not about navel-gazing. It's about a level of self-awareness that I feel allows us to come into what I'm going to call health. It's not about looking at parameters outside. It's about a better understanding of ourselves and how we navigate the world with wiggle room, with allowance, with an understanding of risk reward that isn't so tight and narrow, or the forget it, I'm not following anything that I know helps me.
I love how you painted that picture. Again, I'm in the same boat. I cut out coffee and it was such a world of a difference. And now as you start to bring it back in, you see the big obvious things, because now that the awareness is there, you're like, how did I miss this? So it's a great, great point, because I know so many of you listening are coffee fanatics and it's like, we can't start the day until we have our coffee. But what is that coffee doing for you or to you? And it's just kind of that aha moment. So I love that you brought that in full circle. And as we kind of wrapped up today's conversation, gosh, we unpacked so much stuff. I'm like, I have pages of notes because of all the goodness that you shared. But is there anything that you feel we hadn't covered or something you would love to leave our listeners with?
I think it's just really honoring what you love and taking a moment to take stock of the little person you were as a child and what they loved to do, and making sure that there's elements of that aspect of childish joy in your adult life. And I feel like that's a really huge piece of health that we often overlook, and we leave behind these parts of ourselves that are nourishing for our, you know, all of us, ourselves going forward. So I think that's just the only thing I want to, there's so many things, but that's something I just want to say. Remember the child within and what they just organically love to do, and bring them back into now.
Oh, I love that, because that one really nourishes the soul.
Yes.
So you brought in all the components. So thank you so much. And of course, how can people follow along with you and learn more about all the good works that you're doing?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You can always find me at AndreaNakayama.com, Andrea Nakayama on all the socials. And then AndreaNakayama.com will lead you back to the work at the Functional Nutrition Alliance, which I know I mentioned several times in our conversation.
Amazing. So, of course, all that will be in the show notes below. So be sure to give Andrea a follow. And if this episode resonates, be sure to let her know. Reach out and say, hey, this is me. I want to know more about this. So thanks again for being our guest, Andrea. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.